going on down there?
Hello, everybody. I'm here at TF Expo in Wichita, Kansas, and I'm talking to Dan Gilvezan, who is the real Spider-Man, and he also was Bumblebee in the original Transformers series. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We're just about at the end of the convention, and it's a great thing to meet the fans. It's very tiring, especially for an old man such as myself. But we've had a great time. It's been great here in Wichita.
And you're kind of feeling that end of the show,
kind of
weight.
Yeah, that sort of like we just did the script reading about 20-30 minutes ago, and it went great. And it's pretty much wind down time now, and party a little bit, and then back to L.A.
Awesome. Well, I guess my first question is, now that the convention day has come and gone, like the main day of it, what was your experience with TF Expo? Any memorable moments for you?
The whole thing's been memorable. It's been a great convention. We were talking about this before. We've done quite a few conventions over the years, and many of them are not well organized. And Phil Searle, who put this one together, it did a remarkable job in keeping everything together and making sure everything was done right. And this has been just a great experience. It's been terrific.
Awesome. Well, obviously the main Transformer-centric questions for you. I mean, just look at the T-shirt you're wearing, the show T-shirt, actually.
See that? Great shirt, too.
It is Bumblebee-centric.
Yes, yes, it is.
I recall, because I was following the news, when the Transformers movie started picking up, that's when it seems like you started working on the book you released.
Yes.
And you've since done the audiobook reading for it. How has the reception been on your end now that the book is out there? It's part of just the fandom literature that can be checked out.
The book has – the fans have loved the book. The genesis of the book was, as I said, we have done conventions. And the questions tend to be all sort of similar. I mean, there's different variations, but people want to know sort of the same things. You know, what were the recording sessions like? What was it like working with so-and-so? How'd you feel about this? So I thought, well, why don't I put this down into a book? And for people who can't make it to the conventions, or for people who come to the conventions and would like to take a souvenir home maybe, I autograph them here at the conventions, and the fan response has been great. I mean, I've gotten some, you know, great reviews on Amazon. That's where the book is available, with several other of my books, and the fans have really loved it. It's been very gratifying for me. In fact, the dedication to the book is for the fans.
Well, I thought it was a natural fit, especially the audiobook version being narrated.
Yes, I hired one of the finest voiceover artists that I could find cheap, and it was me, as a matter of fact.
Looking through the list, oh wait, that's my
exactly.
name.
Exactly, I was pretty much at the top. I was the only name on the list.
I can pay me later.
Exactly, I took no fee. I took a percentage off the top. But mm-hmm. Yeah, doing the audiobook was a lot of fun too, and a lot of people have enjoyed that in particular. And some of the comments have been, it's great to hear that voice, you know, telling his own story. So, yeah, the book has been really well received.
The genesis behind it is it seems like the most constructive response, and like positively constructive response, to the age-old convention anecdote of, you know, oh, they keep asking the same questions, you know,
right.
What was it like to, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I thought it's a great idea. Like, speaking as someone who's been to a lot of BotCons, has taken in a lot of Q&As, mm-hmm. like having a referenceable piece of literature or
yeah.
audio literature.
Yeah. One of the nicest criticisms was from someone, I can't remember exactly who it was, who runs a Transformers website. It's very well known. He said, it's like going to a panel at a convention, but it's better because you get to take it home with you.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a pretty cool thing to say.
Well, speaking of panels, I'll always remember the first panel I saw you at was, I believe, BotCon 2004.
Wow. It was one of my first.
Well, I remember you had quite a unique style, like just in general. You have a lively style, but you were one of the first Q&A voice actors I saw who would stand up. And I remember you were walking around a lot.
Yes.
And it felt like you were taking it less as, I'm going to sit here and just receive your questions, and more like,
yeah.
This is going to be an experience. We're all going to collaborate on.
Exactly. Just about every convention, they want to put me behind a table. And I don't want to be behind a table. I want to be closer to the fans. And in fact, in this convention, I did the same thing. It was, they said, here's your table. And I said, no, my table is going to be down here with the fans. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's more intimate. I feel like it's I can move a little bit, you know, more easily. And there's nothing between us.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather be right with the fans, and it feels better to me that way anyway.
And I feel it has an element of almost showmanship to it. Like it reminded me a lot of, I mean, it's not a comedy routine, but it reminded me of a lot of the techniques of stand-up. Of
right. Well,
moving
I can be very
energy.
Funny when I choose to be. Unless my wife tells me that anyway.
You know, back in 2004, I distinctly recall something about a crevasse.
Oh, God. You know, that was one of my first, and I hadn't really figured out how to censor myself real well. So, yes, there was something about my ass stuck in a crevasse, I believe it was the term that I used. I haven't said that since, and I never will again.
I'm very pleased you remember that.
Yeah, I'm sorry I just said it just now.
That there is a mini disc recording of that panel buried somewhere in a closet.
Yes, I'm sure.
Someday,
I'm
may surface.
Sure.
So nowadays, I mean, when the movies were running, like, and it was kind of like, I thought a really cool vibe of your book is like, these movies are happening. Bumblebee's in them. He doesn't talk, and I'm kind of the voice of Bumblebee. So
yeah.
Here I am.
Yeah.
There is now a new video game coming from Platinum, Transformers Devastation.
Yeah.
And how long has it been since you've been officially doing voice work in this franchise?
Well, if this franchise, it's been 30 years. I mean, we finished the show in 85. Yes, 85, after all of those episodes. So it's been 30 years since I finished the show. And I got a call from my agent a few months ago and said, I got some great news for you. You're going to be doing Bumblebee again. I said, what? And they said, yeah, they're doing a video game. And they're taking a G1 slant on it, and they're trying to find as many of the original voice actors from G1, and they want to, you know, to do the voices for the game. And I thought, wow, this is going to be great. So they got me, they got Greg Berger as Grimlock, they got Michael Bell is doing Prowl, and of course Frank and Peter doing their Megatron and Optimus. It's going to be awesome. I've seen some pieces of it, and they've captured that G1 vibe beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such fun to go back and do this character again. He's a, you know, the wisecracking element, they've got that in there. While he's battling, he's throwing off wisecracks, and they've done a really, really fine job, and I think people are really going to, especially the G1 fans are really going to eat this up.
Well, you've been doing off and on Bumblebee just at conventions, at, you know, these kind of fan script readings for a while. Was there any kind of moment of haze when you were actually getting back in the booth to do, like, legit franchise Bumblebee, or was convention Bumblebee still kind of lingering in there somewhere?
Well, no, I mean, the way the video games are done, you're in there by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, back in the old days when we were doing the original series, I feel like Statler or Waldorf, one of the Muppets, we were all in the recording booth together, and it was such a great, it was like a big party. It was fantastic. And so this is very different. They put you in a room by yourself, and you work with the director and the engineer. And you just do line by line by line, because the games work, you know, you come to an intersection. Should I go left or should I go right? You know, and then if the player chooses right, they go, no, that's the wrong way. Or, you know, that's the right way. So you just record these lines over and over and over. But even so, it was so great to go back into that character. And they had a reference tape from the G1 series, because I said, I need to listen to this so I can make sure that I'm right there. And I think I hit it pretty good after 30 years. You know, your voice does change. It goes through some aging, and it gets a little more gravelly and a little deeper. But I think I hit it pretty good. I mean, you'll have to be the judge of that, but I think I did him justice.
Well, no spoilers or anything, but how many variations of did you have to do for the video game?
A lot.
I know that's a thing for video game voicing.
A lot. Yeah. Fortunately, they left that to the end. But there's a lot of hits, a lot of punches, a lot of, you know, falling, a lot of falling off cliffs, a lot of, ah! Can you make it a little longer? Ah! ah, can you make it a little longer? No, I don't want to. Ah! So it's really taxing vocally. Mm-hmm. It's very taxing vocally. But fortunately, as I said, they leave that stuff to the end of the session, so you don't really blow your voice out until the very end.
And, I mean, you worked under the gaze of Wally Burr, so I know there are
stories
from
that. Yeah, so I'm
used
to being ordered around. Yeah.
Two semitones.
Yeah.
Give me a level two.
Wally was the director. I mean, he kept at us until he got exactly the reading he wanted, and he was a perfectionist. And I think the show bears that out. I mean, the vocal work on the show is outstanding. I think we were talking about that earlier today too. And it's mm-hmm. you know, you had the top voiceover people in town. You know, on this show, you had Frank and Peter and myself and Neil Ross and Corey Burton and just on and on. I mean, the creme de la creme of the voiceover community. So it was a pleasure working with him, and I think the results bear that out.
Oh yeah, no definitely. One of the joys of the aughts, going to so many conventions then, was this growing legend of Wally Burr through all of the voice actors who worked with him.
Yeah.
Until we actually had him at a convention himself, and I believe his first Q&A session was basically just people telling him these stories we heard about you. Can you confirm, yes. Or are they?
Yes, and they are true. I mean, Wally would have us doing take after take after take until he got exactly what he heard in his head. You know, what he thought that line should be, and until you gave it to him, you were not moving on. Mm-hmm. So it was in a way it was grueling, but I think the end result was the end result came out beautifully, and he got what he wanted, and it worked.
Awesome. Well, a lot of us are looking forward to having our go through Devastation, and ideally someone out there will try to go through the game enough to archive all of the that happens.
There's plenty of it.
Now that you've had your official return through this game in a way, you've got your book out. Mm-hmm. On the Transformers end, do you feel like there's anything next for you? Say another book, maybe more convention appearances.
Well, I'm working on another novel, nothing Transformers related. But as I said before, you really can't tell in this business what's coming around the corner. I mean, mm-hmm. it's entirely possible if the game does well and if they make enough money. I mean, that's always the bottom line in this business, mm-hmm. Is money. And if they think they can make more money by doing more G1 games, they will do that. So I don't know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen. I did Spider-Man again, which I had performed from 1981 through 1984 on the mm-hmm. NBC series Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Several years ago, I went back to that character and did it for a video game called Shattered Dimensions, where they used four of the voices who had voiced Spider-Man before. So you never know. I mean, it just came out of the blue. Suddenly, I'm doing Spider-Man again, and suddenly I'm doing the G1 Bumblebee again, and it's been a real pleasure to go back to those characters.
Well, I always have an interest in what guests at Transformers conventions are doing outside of the Transformers focus. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a book. Is there anything you can share yet, or is it still in the works?
This one is still in the works, but the one I just came out with is called Soul, which is a fantasy. It's a novel based on absolutely nothing but what I thought of in my head. But it concerns a plague on Earth that has shut down human production, so there's no more babies being born, and as a result, the souls waiting in heaven to be sent down to Earth to be implanted into bodies are backing up like cordwood. The dispatch station is completely overrun with souls. Somebody has to do something. So one brave soul agrees to go down to be sent down to Earth and discover what exactly is the problem. So they implant him into a 39-year-old insurance adjuster from Columbus, Ohio, who has a near-death experience. The original soul goes out, and our soul comes in. The only problem is they haven't given him any information about his new life, so he has to figure out who he is. He doesn't even know he's married. He has a mistress who keeps hassling him. His boss hates him. There's a lot of complications for him even before he starts his mission to find out what's wrong with what's causing this plague. So it's a fun book, and there's a lot of adventure. He has to go to China at one point to try and find the source of the contagion. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun writing, and it came out pretty good, I thought. I'm pretty happy with it.
I always like the idea of taking something, the mysticism or the mythology of the human existence, and then trying to apply, like, you know, as you said, like, you know, they're stacking up at the dispatch office,
right?
It's applying some kind of either hard science or even bureaucracy to the whole thing.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And it's fun because with a fantasy, you can do anything you want as long as you stay within the parameters that you set up within the fantasy. Whatever, however you set your world up, as long as you operate within those parameters, you can do anything you want. And it's very freeing for an author to be able to do that.
I don't know too much about the way that that, you know, novels move their way into things like audiobooks, but having done your own audio reading for your Bumblebee-centric book, if there were an audio version of Soul, would you at least say, hey, you know, I can do this.
Here's what I would do. I would audition many actors, and then I would hire myself. That's pretty much what would happen. I will do eventually the audio book version of it. I just have to get some studio space cleared and get some time to do it. And that'll be coming. Hopefully, I'll get it out later this year.
Oh, very awesome. Yeah. That sounds like a synopsis up my alley. So I'm going to keep my eyes out for this.
I hope you enjoy it.
One last question about mm-hmm. the writing process. Like, do you have a way, like, do you have a place you like to go to do your writing, or does it just sort of come to you?
No, I'm at my desk with my computer, and mm-hmm. I try to sit there for at least a couple of hours, because there's sort of a period where you have to wait for it to come. Mm-hmm. You know, Stephen King talks about opening the window and let the muses, you know, blow in. So you have to kind of sit down for a little while, and I try to do it for the same time every day, but I am incredibly lazy, and it's difficult for me to get into that chair. But once I'm in there, it all starts to come, and I usually start with an outline, so I know where I'm going with the story. But getting there, it's I'll tell you what, it's not digging ditches, I'll give you that. It's not huge, hard physical labor, but writing a book is really a difficult thing. I have huge respect for anyone who's finished a novel. You know, mm-hmm. any kind of creative endeavor like that, it's very difficult to keep coming back to that, keep refining it, keep making it better, keep changing it, keep saying this doesn't work, I'm going to throw this out, I'm going to try this. I mean, it's a real process. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. So, as I said, I have a great deal of respect for anybody who ends up writing a book and finishing it.
I've had a sideline view to that world through my brother by trade is a writer, and I've asked him about his process, because I work in video mm-hmm. now, and there are similarities, but he's explained things to me like Pomodoro time, like setting aside the 2 hour a day thing, like all kinds of different approaches. It is definitely a heavy work, especially a full novel, like to have
it's
whole story, like a world in your head that you have to explain carefully and maybe a little slower than it exists up here.
Yes, it helps to have a great deal of OCD to keep coming back to this thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to come back and do it some more. And it's percolating in your head even when you're not working on it, in the background somehow. And then when you come to it again to try and bring it out, it's interesting the stuff that comes out that you hadn't even, you know, considered that would be there. It's an interesting process.
Well, I'm definitely going to check out Soul and look forward to what you've got coming next.
Okay.
And that's out and about wherever one could get a hold of books nowadays.
Yeah, all my books are available on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. Just do a search on my name and they'll come up. And they're in, well, the two I have, the first book I wrote is called Drowned in the Grenadine, and that's a fictionalization of my time in Hollywood working as an actor. It's very instructive if anyone is considering going into this insane business. There's a lot of stories in there about stuff that happened to me. I've changed it slightly so I don't get sued by people. But that one is available on Amazon as a print book, an e-book, or an audio book, which I once again hired the finest voice talent that I could find to record it, and it just happened to be me again, which is weird.
I keep getting
these jobs.
The
I don't know
director
what this is
and you
about.
Have a real connection.
Exactly. I don't know what this is. So that's available. And then, of course, Bumblebee and Me, same thing, print book, audio book, and an e-book. And Soul is available as a print book and an e-book. And I will be working on the audio version soon. And I've got something in the hopper right now that I'm working on. But I don't want to talk about it at this point, because it's when you start discussing works in progress, it sometimes gums up the works. So I'm going to keep mm-hmm. that under my hat for now.
I'm looking forward to it. It's great to hear how prolific you're keeping
It's a great creative outlet. I mean, anyone who writes or who, you know, even for a hobby, you know how creative it is. And one of the nice things for an actor is, you know, I've lived all of my life as an actor with a director telling me how to do this and an editor deciding which take they like the best. So a lot of it's out of your hands. This is totally in my hands. You know, I can do whatever I want to do, and nobody's looking over my shoulder telling me how to do it or, you know, don't do that or do this. And it's very freeing that way. And it's for a creative person, it's an important outlet.
Oh, very much so. Well, thanks very much for your time as well.
I'm glad to be here.
If you want to check out what Dan Gilvezan's up to, just look him up.
Look me up.
He's all over that internet now.
Everywhere. Everywhere you look. I'm on Facebook, so look me up on Facebook. I have many, many fans there. I have a fan page, and I also have a personal page. Twitter, I got hacked. I got hacked, man.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they hacked me, and so I just shut it down rather than deal with that, so I'm not on Twitter anymore. But Facebook, I'm very active on. And, of course, I have my website, dangilvezan.com, which has a lot of stuff about me and the stuff that I'm doing and have done. So, yeah, I have a pretty robust internet presence.
All right. If you want to know more about Dan, that's the myriad of places you can go.
That's one way you're doing it. Or you could just show up at my house if you could find it. I'm not going to give out the address, but if you could find me, I'll sit down with you. You
know? Yeah, like if someone puts in the work, you know, puts in the grindstone.
If somebody's going to go to the trouble of looking me up, you know, and Google Earthing me, and looking down at my house and seeing me lay out in the backyard taking some sun, and then come to my house, you know, I'm open.
Yeah, you know, come on in, have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, you'll have to get past my wife. That's the only problem.
Yeah, and you'll be on the time clock of whenever the police show up. But
yeah, basically, which will be pretty quick.
Probably. Yeah, it's at least 60 seconds, you know, to get that elevator pitch out. But yeah, thanks for your time, and I hope you had a good show, and look forward to see you at the next show, wherever, whenever.
Thanks for having me.
Add all that up, I know what the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.